Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I have played my flute and I have offered sacred fire in the four directions. Please join me in sacred ceremony. I speak as spirit moves me to speak, and I invite you to do the same by calling me at 646-595-3440. And now, Mud Toe at Midnight.
In the interest of full disclosure, I feel I should say that the sacred fire hasn't actually been lit. I'm here at my parents' house, and out of sort of indifference to them, I haven't actually asked them. I don't know how they would. In point of fact, I don't know how they would react to the sacred fire, sacred smoke. Actually, I say sacred fire, and that kind of sounds better, but it's really more sacred smoke than sacred fire. But anyway, I haven't cleared it with them, you know, to produce the sacred fire, especially in the middle of the night while they're sleeping. So I have simply offered the means of making the fire, and that's sufficient when it's not possible for whatever reason to actually light the sage or the incense or whatever it is you're using. And there are many circumstances when that's the case. If someone has a sensitivity, let's say, to fragrance or smoke, or if you're outdoors and on, say grass, that's something that might catch on fire. It's generally considered a good idea to what's the word I want? I'm getting so terrible about this. To just forego. That's the word I want. To just forego the sacred smoke and offer it to the four directions and take it as read. My space heater came on. Okay, now it's back off, but I'm going to turn it off anyway because it's probably making noise. I don't want that to disturb you. I don't want the sacred smoke to disturb my parents, and I don't want my space heater to disturb you. My room that I stay in here at my folks' place is the coldest room in the house. So I snuck my space heater out of storage in the basement, and I've been turning it on just enough to take the just enough to take the chill off the air. And it's I don't know, that's really all I have to say about that, except that it is here. This is a relic of my former existence, because my old apartment could get rather chilly as well, mainly because it just cost a lot to keep it warm, so I kept the thermostat turned down, backed up with the electric. So you do what you have to do. I mean, you're increasing greenhouse gases no matter what you do. Always looking for solutions to that, to decrease my carbon footprint. But haven't been here lately. I've just been. It seems to get. And I don't mean this. I want to be careful how I say this. I find it more difficult to be green when I'm around my parents, because they really don't make any effort to do it. And there's a sort of respect thing that comes in. You know, it's their house. I don't really want to be green without their permission. And I've been setting out milk cartons and aluminum cans and such, because they asked me to do it. They asked me to separate them out and not put them in the regular trash. But then I have no idea where they're going, because my brother asked me, he says, "Are you recycling?" And indicated, you know, where I was putting the stuff. And I said, "Well, no, that's just where Dad told me to put it." So my brother's not aware of any sort of recycling operation going on here. So I don't know, they could be separating it out so that they can pack their garbage more efficiently for all I know, but just do what I'm asked to do, because they're being kind enough to allow me to make I guess you'd have to call it an extended stay here. What's happening is the part-time job I do at the university is winding down for the semester. I have two more days to do, and then I likely will not be working again, possibly for as long as 2 months.
So, I thought my best, since I don't have any money coming in, I thought my best option was to hide out here with the folks. This is until the January semester, the winter semester, I guess is what they call it. I don't know. See, I went to that university, did my undergrad and my master's, and studied for PhD for 4 years there. And they changed the schedule on me, so I don't know what's going on there at what times anymore. They went from they went from quarters to semesters. But I do know that finals are coming up, and then things won't get cranked back up at the medical school until possibly as late as mid-January. So I could be. My goodness, I'm sorry. I shouldn't clear my throat into my mic. But gives me some time to think about, you know, what it is that that needs to be done, because I can already feel this sort of comfortable malaise coming over me. You know, so I can just sit here, because I can't get out of the house. At least not very convenient. I mean, I have a car. I can go someplace if I want to, but it's cold outside and I don't want to go out. So yeah, I can sit here and get up in the morning and have a bowl of cereal. And then Mom will make me lunch. And I can putter around through the afternoon and watch reality TV. And Mom will make me supper. And I can putter around all evening, watch sports. And then go to bed and start all over again. I really haven't, my day has come to nothing. Just puttering, just lots of puttering. I have considered finding perhaps a seasonal job here for at least the next couple of weeks. It will keep me in filthy lucre. Although I don't really have much money. See, that's the thing, when I'm here, another way that I can become very comfortable and no sense of urgency is that as long as I'm staying with my parents, I don't need any money. They take care of me. They might just sit here. I could sit here and they take care of me for the rest of my life. Or the rest of their life. That's where it becomes problematic. I'm looking hard for some life lessons that might be coming out of this experience. And I think, I don't know if I found one or not, but I've been, I mentioned reality TV, I've been watching Kendra on Top. I don't know if you're familiar with that show, but it's Kendra, I don't even know her last name, Wilkinson maybe? Well, anyway, she got her start living with Hugh Hefner. She was on that show with Hugh Hefner and the three blondes that lived with him in the Playboy Mansion. They did a show about it. She was one of the three blondes. And now she's got her own show where she lives with this, actually she's married to, this. He's a former sports star. His name is Hank. I don't remember his last name. Well, they're married, but he cheated on her. And this whole season has been all about what's Kendra going to do about him cheating on her. And it's a sort of a very one-note kind of show. But I found myself sort of, I've found myself moved to watch it as much as I can. And they do, for my convenience, they do little mini marathons of it. You know how that works, where they take, you know, they'll show four shows in a row or six shows in a row or whatever, so I can catch up on what I missed. And mainly it's just kind of her, Kendra, being upset. She's very upset because Hank won't tell her why he cheated on her. This has been going on for weeks. Just upset. And sometimes he's living in the house, and sometimes she kicks him out. And he wants her, he's in tears. He wants her back. They have a couple of kids. So I'm wondering, since I'm drawn to the show, since I'm feeling moved to watch it, there must be some lesson that I'm supposed to learn. So my task becomes, what is Kendra trying to teach me? Or perhaps, what is Hank trying to teach me? Because he is a co-equal part in this process. It is her show, and she is in it more than he is. But he is also a man, as I am a man. He has cheated on his wife, as I cheated on my wife once. Is there something I do identify with him in some ways, and I don't identify with him in other ways. Am I supposed to be identifying with him more strongly? Am I supposed to be identifying with him less strongly? Am I supposed to be identifying with Kendra and her sort of? I find myself frustrated often with sort of the pace at which Kendra moves. Kendra does not move at a quick pace. And she's sort of, I think I said this already, she's kind of one note. She says the same things over and over again. And these are things that kind of get under my skin. And they make it difficult for me to think, not just on Kendra, but in real life, when a lot of people express themselves this way. They don't kind of chatter like I do. I have to work at that, especially sometimes even on this show, if I start to get worked up or have something I want to say and I'm trying to get a lot of stuff out, I will begin to talk very fast. And I can't actually talk as fast as I used to. When I was younger, I could chatter. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I would expect the people around me to be able to keep up with me. And often they couldn't, just because I was just chattering so fast. And so I would become irritated, and I would avoid conversations with those people. Now, as I've gotten older and a touch more mature, I've endeavored to be. This is going to sound the way I want it to. What I was going to say was I never to be more patient with the way other people's express themselves, but that's sort of value laden. It sounds like I'm saying my way of expressing myself is better, and I always felt that way. I thought I was superior because I could speak faster and think faster. Now I realize that's just a thing. I can't run faster. There are people who can run faster than I can, and I. In my head, devalued that because it wasn't something I could do. The things that I could do well were the things that were important, and I think many, many people sort of share that worldview, that the things that they value are the things that are also valuable on a grand scale, things that are most valuable to everybody. So I don't mean that as a value kind of thing. I mean as saying, again, people have the right to the way that they express themselves. And if I'm interested in that person and what they have to say, I need to make the effort to not be an asshole and not sort of throw them, you're just repeating yourself, and I don't even want to love you to make, well, there's a repeating yourself, but there's a message within that. There's something, again, that I need to divine, that I need to learn. So the question is, what is the message? And I can't report that I've made a lot of inroads into that. But I thought perhaps if I talked about it on the show, maybe something would occur to me. Unfortunately, it hasn't. So there's half the show blown away on that. But again, I don't always understand why it is that I speak to what I have. I mean, Great Spirit calls me to speak, and I say, that's not a matter of Great Spirit. You know, we don't sit down before the show, and he tells me what to say. It's what occurs to me. The things that come into my head, I act upon them under the assumption that they're the inspiration of spirit or the inspiration of the ancestors, the inspiration of something. And then so that's what I talk about. And then things, it's sort of a continuous developing mess as we go through this entire, this 30 minute exercise in stream of consciousness. And my hope is that somebody somewhere needed to hear what I said. And that somebody, and somehow those words will get to them. So that's how this sort of sloppiness comes into being. And I know, I mean, this is something I felt strongly about, which means it's probably, of course, always the things that seem to go the best, the seems that I get things that I get the most positive feedback about, are the ideas that were either completely spontaneous or the ones that I didn't really feel all that strongly about, but I needed something to fill out the half an hour. This is an idea that I felt very, it was in my hands, okay, I think this is something, since this has been occupying so much of my time and so much of my thought, this, obviously this must be something I need to talk about. But since it's obvious, maybe that means it wasn't really something I needed to talk about. So hard to know about these things. Just so hard to know. And I try not to squander these precious 30 minutes, because right now I feel like this is the only time I'm really spending on my spiritual pursuits. Up until now, ever since I moved out of my apartment, I've been spending the lion's share of my time working, or going back and forth from work, or finding other various ways to occupy myself so that I'm not torturing the people who are allowing me to stay with them while I'm working over there in the big city. It occurs to me, I mean, those are the things that I've been doing, and that hasn't, I haven't been making the effort to find a whole lot of time for spirituality. I went to Great Council. That was back in September. I did some work on my medicine bundle. That's been a while ago now. And beyond, I mean, other than that, this show is it. This show is how I get my spirit on, get my ancestors on. That's not 100% true. I've also made a commitment as a spiritual person and as a clergyman. When I'm surfing the net, when I was particularly on Facebook, and I see people, someone give a request for prayer, I do that. In the past, I generally wouldn't accede to a request for prayer unless it was someone I knew. An actual, not a Facebook, no. But now I'm saying, okay, if I'm going to represent myself as a spiritual being and I see a request for prayer, I'll fulfill that request. Because I don't write particularly flowery prayers. You know, basically, I say the request is for, you know, someone's in the hospital and they're requesting healing for that person. I'll say healing for whatever person's name, and then I'll also request peace of mind for everyone who, you know, all the people who are loved by that person or who love that person. And I close it with all my relations. It's a one-line prayer, and I think it's very effective. I believe in concentrated prayer. You know, the shorter a prayer is, the more to the point it is, the more powerful it is, because, you know, then your spirit doesn't have to spend a lot of time wading through unnecessary verbiage to get to the actual request. So that, I call that a spiritual process. So we got my praying on Facebook, and we got this, and that's been it. Another thing I have noticed is that ties into this whole spirituality and then lack of spiritual practice. I find my sort of running story that goes on in my head, that's the that in the past anyway has been the inspiration for the stories that I write, and my story writing machine has been on the fritz for quite a while now. That sort of narrative has become something that's not particularly useful for the writing of stories. It's just a story of myself putting myself in the place of a wealthy and powerful man who has been done wrong, usually by a woman, and bad things are happening. There's a divorce. There's consequences in public media. I've been cuckolded, you know, whatever. All these things are happening. And it's just this constant feeling of, as I'm picturing myself at the you know, being interviewed, or I picture myself at the divorce hearing, or this very negative sort of issues. And kind of, you know, picture myself having to, you know, having my fortune being parsed up and taken away from me, you know, for whatever reason. And so all this sort of running negative flow of ideas going through my head, entertaining myself, and then so I don't actually have to go and do anything because I'm always being sort of entertained in my head. And then sometimes violent imagery will make its way into it. Someone picks a fight with me, and I totally clobber this person, which absolutely would not happen in real life. I have no skills in fighting. But, you know, I collaborate, and even in this sort of narrative, I'll cheat. You know, I'll you know, grab a pool cue or a motorcycle helmet and just beat the living crap out of somebody. There's lots of screaming. You know, I'll scream at this person who's trying to divorce me. I'll scream at her boyfriend. Accusations, screaming at each other, just the foulest language I can imagine, and that's pretty foul. And then I'll feel very shaky afterwards. Spent in a way. Fearful. And I don't want to do anything. I mean, it was you know, entertaining myself anyway. And, you know, I'll just go to my room and take a nap. I was very conscious of that happening today. I was just sitting in my chair all day long because I had big plans. And I had to, okay, day after Thanksgiving, I'll get home. I'll get some stuff done. I'll get my LinkedIn profile set up. I got a beautiful picture that my friend's daughter, Markel, took for me, and I'm going to put that, you know, start making up, and I've worked on my resume. It's starting to round out to more like what I wanted and less like what my former employment counselor wanted it to be. You know, I can do all that, but then I didn't. I sat in the big chair basically all day trying to think if I ever got... I don't think I was out of that chair all day until I came in here to get ready to do the radio show. Because we eat in front of the television. So it's just a day. A lot of college basketball games. And a lot of Kendra on top. It would have been perfect if they would have had a Mika model auction. That's absolutely my favorite thing to watch. They didn't have any. They had some on Thanksgiving, but I was away from Thanksgiving. I couldn't watch it. And I did watch a couple hours of it when we got home. But Mika Model Auction, it's just perfect because you don't have to spend any brain power on it at all. It's just they show you these cars, and they're terrific old cars. So I love, and I'm very happy watching it. I don't remember ever having these disturbing, you know, trains of thought when I was watching Mika. So I wish we had a DVR so I could just record it and just run it all the time. Just never, just Mika all the time, all day, all the time, Mika, just have a Mika network. Mika's the name of the guy who runs it. It's an auto auction. And I've been to one. I mean, actually, the last 2 years, I went to the one that in Indianapolis. And it's just something to see them live, too. I'd love to go with somebody. Both times I went by myself. And one of the really crappy things about not having a girlfriend, although I don't know if a girlfriend would really be interested in Nikum, but maybe it's one of those things you could barter, you know. You go with me to Nikum, and I'll go with you to some god-awful woman thing. I don't know. But, so there are, I guess, state of mind seems to have something. Maybe not state of mind. Maybe that's not what I'm thinking of. But there are times when this negativity seems to flow very easily, and times when it seems to be forgotten. So I need to get more to those times where it's forgotten. And I made an effort to see when I realized, I noticed, you know, how long I've been sitting in that chair and how much negativity was going through my head. Made an effort to just interdict the story when it started to run. A story with a negative, you know, sort of through line, you know, that I'm being robbed, I'm being divorced, I'm being, you know, this thing, these bad things are happening to me. Of course, my New Age friends who are listening right now are going nuts because they're saying, see, that's, you're calling all that stuff down on yourself. And hey, maybe I am. You know, maybe my lethargy, my negative state of mind, and you see, it becomes chicken and the egg. You know, is this negativity because of my state of mind, or is my state of mind because of the negativity? But either way, they certainly do seem to be linked together. So if I can get rid of one, maybe I can get rid of the other. And the one that I seem to have, I would think I have the most direct control over, is when I see one of these shitty little plays starting to work their way into my mind, it's just shift to something else. And so I made an effort to do this evening, and boy, was it hard. I had no idea just how negative and depressed I really was. But I had some success. You know, I was, I'm not going to tell that story to myself. Nope, I'm not going to tell that story to myself either. Got into a story that I've been working on and off, a story that would be for writing. About and again, the stories get kind of depressing too. But I think that's allowed to happen because the story has a beginning and an ending, and I can walk away from it. Okay, I entered this story so I can write it, and now I can now that it's written, I can put it away. I don't have to carry it with me all the time. But the story was about a young boy in sort of primitive society who's born. Both of his parents are dead. And he doesn't have a name because in this society, only parents are allowed to give the kids names. And so he's grown up basically since the age of, say, 10 years old. And he's raised by the shaman. And the village sort of comes under attack by this very large bear. And the kid has the insight into the bear because he has a... the ability to sort of see into the spirits of these animals, and it's the boy who saves his community by talking the bear out of, you know, eating them all. And I hadn't really thought about that story for a long time, and it really lifted my spirits to think about it. It's one of the more positive things that I've ever worked on as a writing project. So I'm going to make a promise to you that there will be some actual writing on that project before I speak to you again next week. And please hold me accountable for that. We've come to the end of our time together. Thank you for joining me for this foolishness. And I'll have more of it for you, I promise, next week at the same time. Once again, thank you for joining me. And